CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Vena. GDPR data privacy laws have transformed data handling practices and regulatory compliance. Data privacy and security is top of mind for most companies. And ensuring you have data protection and compliance is complicated and costly, as are the consequences of non-compliance. Here to discuss the implications of GDPR laws on financial operations is Greet Gemmels. Greet is the Chief Financial and Operating Officer at Advantage Group International, where she oversees the finance, human resources, and operations functions of the global market research company. Thank you so much, Greet, for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So before I get started into some of my questions, can you tell us a little bit more about the Advantage Group and some of your background?
So Advantage Group was founded about 35 years ago. The primary kind of source of being is helping relationships between business to business. So we are currently in about 49 countries, and I joined Advantage about 18 years ago, and I've been there ever since.
Excellent. Wow. So you cover a lot of different areas, different regions. So maybe we should just start, you know, right at the beginning in terms of explaining what GDPR is and, you know, why does it matter? What was the impact of bringing in that legislation?
Sure. I would say about 10 years ago, we started seeing kind of the first inklings come through. And surprisingly, it was through Poland, who was really starting to adopt pieces of the legislation that we now know as GDPR. But we saw it kind of coming on the horizon. And in the very beginning, I think we at Advantage saw this as a very European topic. And we also approached it as is. And so we started really building our data privacy and our data security around the European region. But very quickly, you realize that it's no longer just a European thing, and privacy legislation is being pushed out everywhere. And I think the main intent of GDPR is just to make sure that personal information is kept safe. And that's essentially really what they're trying to accomplish, just not having it do any harm.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because when it did first come out, there was lots of talk about it. You know, the law firms were talking about it. You could find articles everywhere, and it was almost this thing. I think a lot of companies were fearing, not knowing what the preparation was going to need to look like. You know, they were talking about project plans, et cetera. But I think you're right, as we digested it, lots of countries do have privacy legislation. There were some similarities, but this one was taking it to the next level. And I think, at least for me, one of the things that jumped out was the fines and penalties that were being attached to this, because even for a company that might be global, doing a little bit of business in Europe, this was going to talk to your worldwide income and sort of be able to stretch beyond those borders. And so it was prudent for everyone to pay attention, really understand what this means, and try to figure out what it was going to mean to what they were going to do in their businesses. I think now that it's been here for a couple of years, we fast forward to where we are, and it's, you know, okay, what has it done and how has it changed, or even in some ways helped strengthen the way that we're doing business? So maybe you can talk a bit about how did implementing this end up changing your financial and business operations?
I think a lot. In the very beginning stages, as I mentioned, we really looked at this from a European perspective. But very quickly, we noticed that no matter what we did or what we tried to roll out, it had an impact. So when you start looking at this from a product perspective, anytime you field a new product and there is a survey or there is data being collected from people in Europe, you suddenly have an exposure there, because you are collecting it and you're taking it from one region to a next region. And just the sheer fact that you're taking this data and transporting it, in a sense, was enough for us to having to really adopt GDPR. And while we don't really talk about GDPR at Advantage, we talk about data privacy, we do have taken the GDPR compliance as our benchmark, really as our stick in terms of measuring all of our data privacy and security against. So we've had to embed it in almost everything we do. So even from an IT perspective, our stage gate process now, one of the very first steps is really looking at what do we collect, who do we collect it from, how do we store it, what do we do with it afterwards. So it has really created a lot more compliance and governance for us in basically every aspect of our business.
So talk to me a bit then about the role that you experienced that finance was playing in this, because I think as well along the journey, it was easy to think of it as, well, that's going to be a legal thing or a data security thing. But it did affect finance and affected the rest of the org. What was your role in all this?
I have a bit of a different role at Advantage, as in both legal and IT report into me. So it was definitely seen as a legal thing. So it originally was legal and therefore it's with Greet. And so I started working on it, but we quickly saw that we really have to kind of look at the overall. And the overall for us was, what are the costs that are implicated? What kind of software do we need to start managing this? What does that look like for our policies? What does that look like for our policies of countries that are no longer part of this? And so we had to really just kind of take a global approach again. So instead of trying to manage 49 different countries and areas, the approach we really took is, like, let's just make sure that we create one global policy. And if there are exceptions, we can insert those exceptions at the end. But to make sure that you can kind of see the forest for the trees, it's good to have one global policy. And that's, again, where GDPR got layered in for us.
And when you were thinking about what this impact was, what were some of the biggest areas that were going to be impacted?
So for us, from a finance perspective, immediately payroll. And because payroll for us was done externally, it's easy for us to say it's a third party. It's not really our problem. We sign an agreement. But as the applications and the fines started stepping in, you kind of see that it's also your duty to make sure that the partners that you work with downstream are just as compliant as you are. So from that end, a lot changed there, because we no longer can send spreadsheets or Excel files around by email like we used to. There's now a place where you put it. It's where it's an end-to-end encrypted tool that gets picked up and moved to a different place where that gets picked up again. So every single one of your operations is suddenly kind of boxed into this area of safety.
Well, and it's interesting, because it was really easy to think of it as, okay, well, that's the payroll system, it's there. But most companies that are starting to scale quickly come to realize that information about an employee, you might have your system of record, your HRIS, your payroll system housing it, but you're putting that information in other places to run your business. And there's a need to do that. You need employees to be set up in other system so they can have access to things to do their job, or you can figure out performance management, you know, other types of things. So lots of integrations exist. And so it did quickly, I think, become clear that this was going to be expanded beyond just one system, because you couldn't really run an efficient business without thinking that way. Along those lines, how much did this impact the way then you were thinking about technology and data security investments at the time?
I think our investments were incredibly high in the very beginning, mostly because there's rules in place now around how you can access data, and there's best practices. So there's the legal requirement, and then there's the best in practice requirement. So one of the things that we aimed for was the ISO 27001 and just kind of becoming compliant with that. So we started following mostly their guidelines in terms of what is expected. There's a multi-factor authentication. There is any file encryption. Any file sharing will happen with the encryption, which is end-to-end. We no longer use email. We use Trezorit to change and move particular files over. So all of that became a lot more governance, a lot more compliance. But really the most about it was really the change management of having people understand that it really isn't us paying for a tool. It's people following the process that is set out according to those best practices in terms of how we handle the data. What do we do with it? How long do we keep it?
So did you end up making any org structure changes?
Yes, we did. We definitely did. One of the things we did is really break IT actually in two separate buckets. One is like the architecture and the infrastructure, which suddenly had to become a lot more rigorous, a lot more compliant with different pieces of legislation. And then there's our dev pool. We really wanted to create a bit of a separation of duties there, because you need to kind of understand where the data goes. And the most important thing for us was, what data do we capture? Where do we save it? How long do we save it? Who has access to it? How is it saved? And we've really kind of carved that department out, and we headed up by a CISO now, who is really kind of overseeing that a little bit better for us.
And what would you say were some of the biggest challenges that you were experiencing in putting in this global standard across when you operate in so many different countries?
The fact that some people are not as exposed to it. So in Europe, we had no issues rolling any change or change management through our circles. It is when we got to markets. For example, the US is one of our flagship operations. It's one of the largest one. Most of our global clients are headquartered there. But for us to go to some of these people and say, these are the things that we now have to do, for them, it's a bit of a far walk because they're not as immersed in it. So there was a fair bit of change management that we had to do both internally, but also externally with our clients.
And I think because there was lots of talk at the time, it at least was made it helpful to help train people up. What is GDPR? What does this mean? Where is it going? Now that it's here, it's been in place, I think there's a responsibility to still keep it top of mind and even keep rethinking what might be changing and how might that be changing the way we have to make sure we stay compliant. Or if you have new hires that are entering the workforce that never heard of what is GDPR, yet it's a critical thing. We have to follow these processes and get it right to make sure we're being compliant. How have you gone about keeping that training and understanding what might be changing top of mind?
We have an onboarding system that includes data privacy, and we do twice annual training. And in between that, what we generally do is we do tests. We will send phishing emails. We will send people like those funny emails where you buy 30 gift cards at Shoppers. So we really try to not necessarily trick people, but like make sure that they're always aware of what the latest items are that are circulating, how people are trying to get to your data, not clicking this, not approving that. And they get better. These phishing emails get so much more sophisticated. So for us, it's really more or less of training, continuously training.
And you're right. I find year on year, keeping ahead of what gotchas might be.
Yes.
It feels like it's such a critical thing that needs to be top of mind. Some days I'm blown away with the new ideas, what's coming in. Speaking of newer things that are top of mind, artificial intelligence, lots of people talking about that. How do you think that that changes or impacts how we make sure we're staying GDPR compliant?
I think it changes everything. I think that AI, before the AI EU Act came through, and I do believe it just got voted into law, there was a lot of guidelines from a lot of market research companies basically saying, for the lack of legislation, these are kind of our rules and how we see it. And it really was closing into data privacy because you collect data. For us, for example, we have interviews with some of the most senior people at a lot of these Fortune 500 companies, and we have that data. Now, there's a lot of tools out there, like AI tools, that will start working with the data that you have. But the most important part about that is that you always need to maintain consent. You can't just take people's data and then use them to push to an AI tool or to apply AI to it, because we never gathered that consent. Now, coming from a market research background where you really approach people with legitimate interest, there's still a very fine line. And what you can see is that the AI Act that was put into law was really driven by data privacy, making sure that not just about anything could happen. And when you look at it, it's really only normal. When you look at how AI and AI tools are trained, there is those that are done very ethically, where the data training and the accuracy and the model card looks really good and very bright. But there's a lot of AI tools right now that are popping up left, right, and center that don't necessarily have the infrastructure underneath them or downstream to show that there is accuracy. So AI is not AI. So I think it's very important that there is some legislation through that, but also that you provide consent to people in terms of what I take from you and what I do with it.
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the only complete planning platform natively integrated with Microsoft 365. With Vena, your finance and operations team can maximize your productivity and efficiency to deliver data and insights to your whole business faster. Vena lets your team use the Microsoft apps they already know and love, like Excel and PowerPoint, while giving your business the power of scale through a robust centralized database and AI capabilities. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
There is some legislation through that, but also that you provide consent to people in terms of what I take from you and what I do with it.
You know, it would have been so nice if GDPR could have been this one-time project. It's done. Okay, good. We're good to go. But, you know, for the reasons you've just talked about, things change as we go, even as companies expand into different footprints, try to adapt new things. one could think that this could get in the way of being innovative as a company and trying new things. How have you balanced that need for innovation and even data analytics, which can be an important part of helping to run a good company, with staying GDPR compliant?
It all starts with making sure it's built into every process that you do. So if you build it into the stage gate process, if you build it into new product development, if you make sure that every single time you put a new process in there or a new program for that matter, that you always make sure that that's part of the thinking. It doesn't need to be in the way. I don't think anybody wants to prevent you from doing anything with these laws. I think they just want you to be responsible with it. So I wouldn't necessarily say that it has gotten into the way, but definitely not in recent years, perhaps in the beginning. But I would say in the last 2 to 3 years, I think it has actually helped us more than it has worked against us, because you have a very clear understanding now of your data flow. You know what you're saving, you know what you have, you know what sits where, what responsibility sits with who. So I would say, if anything, we've really been able to monetize our data pools more accurately than we did before.
As you think about that, you know, the ongoing, there's new risks that present, there's maybe new plumbing that's required in your systems as you adapt new ones. When you're thinking about how to plan for the business, whether it's your forecasting, but also your business planning, how does GDPR and the privacy legislation factor into that?
So there's obviously a bunch of different tools that we've adopted since GDPR became in effect. We have file sharing is done differently now. We use outsourced companies and outsourced consultants that will help us put these together, because almost every vendor, particularly if they're located in Europe, there is vendor onboarding systems now that will take us 2 to 3 days to complete, because they look at you, they look downstream, they look upstream. So there's a fair bit of substance that needs to be created each and every time. So we've really kind of like looked at partners that specialize in this area. It's almost security as a service, and they're the ones that counsel us along the way. They also assist with training programs. There's a lot more legal people. I no longer have one legal counsel. We now have 39 legal counsel, because you need to make sure that all these things continue to be up to date. So there is definitely an added expense layer that came with us.
And so you've had the benefit of, when this came in, you were overseeing legal, IT, finance. Not every org structure is that way. And you mentioned even now you've got a chief information security officer. Based on your experience, what would be some of the best practices you would advise to finance individuals on how finance should best interact and collaborate with these other stakeholders to make sure that we're on top of this and planning and moving through this in a coordinated way?
I think people always want to do well. So I think it's really the biggest kind of push that we did is really around change management. So we really wanted to, like, having 49 countries, everybody's going to do a little things a little bit different. So we tried to engage people as much as we could and really flush out all of the exceptions that we had. So for us, it was really important to work directly with the markets. And I was lucky in terms of, I oversee operations, I oversee a technology. So there was one somewhat united front. So I think it's important to stay consistent, like that, so people understand what can and can't be done, where you can and cannot save things. It sounds very restrictive, but I think in the end, people just want clarity. And I think that once you are able to provide that clarity and that change management aspect of why we're doing it, I think that made things a lot easier for us.
Could you maybe share with us whether it's an actual example that you've had in your company, or even one that you have heard of in this journey, where there was risk identified and that was going to impact the business, and how that was managed? Just as I think sometimes these real life examples can be so helpful to make us realize what this could look like.
There's a requirement called incident management, where every single time there's an incident, you have to kind of say, this is what happened, these are the people that were involved, this is what we'll do about it, and this is how we'll remedy it. And in the very beginning of me working together with third party consultants, I'm like, oh, we don't have any incidents, because I was under the impression that everything that we had was just a small issue and we could just get over it. But then something as small, and this is like an example that we had in the past, we work with a payroll company, well, we worked with a payroll company in the UK, and we had worked with them for over 10 years. So before that happened, files would get sent back and forth with Excel, and these Excels would include social insurance numbers, they would include their salaries, their reductions, their pensions, and they would be sent around freely over Excel. Now, as we onboarded our new vendor and said, we're now compliant, we expect you to do A, B, C, and D, we signed the paperwork, everything was kind of well until you go into the practicality of things where one of their new employees took the file and sent it to somebody in a local office. Luckily, that person was HR, but it could have been somebody entirely different because generally people are copied on that. So suddenly this becomes an incident. And this incident, you have the obligation to look at what you can do to make sure that that doesn't happen in the past. And for something with a threshold that's high on the PII data, you have to make the decision to look elsewhere. So you have to discontinue working with them and kind of set up somewhere else again, because you do have to show that you have every intent of making the thing go right, making it go smooth. And so we had to say goodbye of quite a few of these smaller incidents.
Wow, that's a tough thing to have to follow through on, especially if on all other accounts you were having a pretty good relationship. How do you implement tracking and monitoring for GDPR compliance now into your day-to-day operations?
It is mostly done by software. So our biggest and most critical kind of exposure is really tied to a small timing within the year. So as we field our programs, which are annual and syndicated, we have a lot of contact lists, and that are contact lists from retailers and manufacturers all around the world. So once we really were able to drill down what is the essence and the nugget of our exposure there, and we were able to find the right partner there for having that end-to-end encrypted, we also have a lot more flexibility in terms of how we delete. And I think data retention is one of the things people very often overlook. But if you save data you no longer need, the question becomes, why do you still have it? So the mechanisms of being able to delete data en masse and making sure it's deleted properly was one of our biggest kind of wishes and goals for our business. So we do track most of that by software.
Sounds easy to say, but the reality of making sure you're staying on top of it is actually a lot of work. As you were implementing, or even now as you try to remain compliant, how do you go about figuring out when you're going to do this work in-house versus outsourcing it?
What we've learned is that software as a service is a real industry, and there is a lot of people that are very good, that are working with companies from small to medium sized to very large. And we've decided the things that we can do internally, the ones that are executional and operational that you need on a day-to-day basis, we've in-housed. But a fair bit has been we've outsourced. You need legal opinions. You need those policies to be reviewed. You need to also review very often. One of the examples that we spoke about earlier around AI. Again, AI, the very first document that people are interacting with you with is going to be your privacy policy. And in that privacy policy, I mean, many people are putting everything in the kitchen sink kind of in there, but like really it's meant for you to explain what you do with it. So if that includes AI, we must have it in there. So to make sure that you're up to date with all of these different requirements and all of the regions that you do business in, it will require you to update this live document continuously. And the same for example, with the cookie policy, there is this cookie law that's its own separate beast, but it also is different country by country. So for us to internally have somebody that will only look at these would make very little sense. So we've been able to outsource our cookies. We've been able to outsource our policy creation. So the things that we can outsource and that gives us a lot of comfort of being compliant is the ones that we do. The ones that are internal and are more related to security, I would say, are the ones that we've kept in-house.
And you mentioned, as you know, some things change or then you need the expertise. How would you recommend that finance professionals can stay on top of what's changing?
Ironically, I will say AI. there is quite a few AI tools in there that will be able to give you a lot of information in a very brief period of time. One of my favorite is AI PDF. It is a AI tool where you can push any PDF in and you can start interacting with it. So any of these pieces of legislation that comes out, I will look at a model card with a high accuracy. I will put my PDF in there and I will really ask it questions. And you can ask it very pointed and very kind of targeted questions to get a better understanding, because many of these are written in such a legal language that it's hard to interpret sometimes what they mean. And I find it to get like a first glance of pieces of legislations that come out, I really love just pushing it through an AI tool and having it tell me exactly what.
Yeah, it is funny that that's the answer, but it's so true. What about benefits? Now that you've had some time to reflect on where we are now compared to where we were, have there been any business benefits you've seen or even efficiency benefits by implementing at this high bar?
I would say yes. I think that as a finance person, we are on a daily basis very familiar with compliance and governance. I'm not saying I love it, but at least it gives you the comfort of you're doing things in the right way. By having this extra piece being rolled out to both the security of our network, of our servers, but also the privacy of the data we collect, store, and process, I think it has given not just me, but also the board of directors a lot more comfort around what we do, that it is the right thing to do, especially working with larger clients who, just like us, will outsource security as a service. So we work a lot with large clients, as I mentioned, and many of the clients have chosen the path of going with one of the big four, and they outsource most of their security. So there's always this interesting kind of phase where they tick all the boxes in the right way, everything is set up properly. But when you get to the operational piece, we very often have to remind them, you can't just send us the contact list. You have to send this contact list through the encrypted end-to-end source. So in a way, as silly as it sounds, it feels good to be on the right side of things and to make sure that you are doing the right thing, not only for your people internally, but also your clients.
Any upcoming privacy changes that you're monitoring or thinking could have effect on your financial and business operations in the next couple of years?
Yes. As we're still working through the AI Act, it's very fresh. I think the next one coming will probably be the US. There's a lot of rumblings there of potentially having this be a federal law and a federal perspective. And I think for us, that will add another layer of complexity in terms of how we will manage that directly. But I think the biggest one next to come is probably the US.
Wouldn't it be so great if we could have global standards on some of these things?
It would definitely be.
Lots of great content covered here. What would you say would be 2 to 3 key things that finance leaders should know as they think about privacy in their business? What should be top of mind?
I think top of mind would really be, why do I have this data? And I think that's the one thing that I continuously ask myself now. Why do I still have that data? As a finance person, I think it's very easy to want to have as much history as you can. Up until the point that we had to go live with GDPR, if I can put it that way, I had every single email that I had ever written through Advantage somewhere in my server. I had every file, every archive. And it's hard to let go. And I was one of the first people having to let go. So I feel like every single time you save something, I think it's good for you to understand where you're saving it, who has access to it, and really what you're going to do with it over time. And the next piece for me, what was really important, is data segregation. I think that once you understand the types of data that you have and the type of people that should have or could have access to it, it's not a very expensive thing to do. If budgets are limited, it's always good to really understand what is the confidential data, what is the privacy data, and at least have a better, some sort of privileged access to that. I think that's a very good starting point.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us for this discussion. You clearly have some amazing experience in this area, and I've really enjoyed hearing all about it. Now, whenever we have guests on the show, we do have 2 rapid fire questions that we like to ask. So are you ready?
Yes.
What is something that you do to stay productive during your workday?
It's very boring and it's very vanilla, but I love lists. Having a couple of different departments report into me, I very much keep a do today, do tomorrow, do by the end of the week. And I rarely ever deviate from that.
Are your lists on the computer or post-it notes?
They are on paper with a pen and a separate post. It's terrible, I know.
I do the same. Sometimes the act of writing it, I think I don't know what helps it. Checking it off the list feels really good.
It does.
What is something that always helps you to turn a bad day around?
feeling I make a difference. It's really nice if there's problems you can solve along the day, and especially if they're in personal in nature. We have 49 countries. There's always someone moving, trying to like do a change in their life and change their tax location and their residency. So those are the things that I still very much enjoy on a day-to-day basis.
Excellent. Some valuable advice there. Thanks again. Really appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you'd like to learn more about today's topic, please visit the links in the show notes. Looking for more great CFO show content? Sign up for our free newsletter. Each week, you'll get a roundup of exclusive content to help you grow and drive strategic transformation. Visit thecfoshowpodcast.com to sign up now. For The CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.